Hey there, and welcome to episode number 22 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I talk to Doug Pinnick from the band King's X. So we talk about a lot of his influences, including the band Yes, also about playing bass guitar and singing at the same time. And Doug also announces something that's coming out that all King's X fans don't want to miss out on. So make sure you listen in and check this one out. He also talks about his time filling in for Living Colour, which is a great story. Personally, I got into King's X a long time ago when they first came out and was fortunate enough to see them back in 1994 with my brother in LA. Here's one of the songs that I first heard from King's X. Now let's go over to the interview with Doug Pinnick. So I thought we'd just start from the start, where how you first got into the bass, really.
How I got into it. I wanted to play bass all my life.
Yep.
I was really obsessed with it to the point where nothing mattered. You know, that's all I did was listen to bass. I didn't know there was guitars and drums. You know, I mean, it was there, but I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention to them at all. And I was obsessed with bass to the point where I was about 23, and I was always talking about playing bass, and all my friends would come over to my house, and the bass would be loud in the stereo or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And I always said, I want to play bass, and I'd walk around with my broom and play like I was playing bass. And one day a guy says to me, literally, if you want one so bad, want to play bass so bad, why don't you go buy one? And I went, a light one on it. It was like, oh, wow. Yeah, and see, I mean, I lived in the ghetto. I had no job. I was 23. I was singing in bands and making no money. You know, we're just playing around town, and I was being a bum, living with my mom and family, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, my best friend came by with a bass for me. He didn't give it to me. It was for his girlfriend for Christmas. And he said, Doug, why don't you play this for a while, and then I'll give it to Debbie for Christmas. And he came to get it, and I wouldn't give it to him. And he came three times to get it, and I wouldn't give it to him.
Yeah.
So he never came back. Later on, he said he knew he wasn't going to get it back, and he just gave up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give it to him. I just wouldn't. It's just curious. You're not getting this back.
Yeah.
And he paid for it, too. It was like $100. Oh, back in 73, $100 was a lot of money.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You can buy 10 albums with $100.
Yeah.
No, actually, you can buy 20 with $100. Records were like $3.99 back then.
Wow. So you grew up in a musical family then before you started the bass?
No, I grew up in my mom's side of the family, and none of them really played music or listened to music much. I mean, don't get me wrong, they played music like crazy. Everybody had a record player. I mean, all the time. I mean, back in the 50s, the blues era of Chicago, I lived up there, and all my relatives had all those records. They'd buy them out of the back trunk of the guy that, you know, Muddy Waters would do a hoochie coo, you know, and they'd come down and open up the trunk, and they'd buy the record, and they'd bring it back to the house and play it. And I was like 5-6 years old. I remember all that, you know.
Yep.
So I had some relatives who were into jazz real heavy, and they'd play jazz all day long in their house.
Mm.
And I had another cousin who played blues all the time, nothing but straight up. I mean, he was just a blues guy, and all he played. So my family never played an instrument, but everybody played the stereo.
Yep.
And they always got excited when there was music, and they went to concerts and they did that stuff, but they never encouraged to play. To this point, I mean, they're all proud of me and what I've accomplished, but it's not, they don't pay attention. You know what I'm saying? They go, oh, Dougie's always doing that. Always in Europe. Oh, that's cool. You know, and they'll tell their cousins. I mean, they'll tell the people they work with, you know, my cousin and my nephew and, you know, and stuff like that. And they're proud of me, but they don't get it. You know, they don't understand. But it's cool. My dad's side are very, 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 like, psycho musical, but none of them play either. Well, I got a couple of them are playing, and a couple of them are singing in bands and stuff. They're, you know, the younger, the next generation, some of them are. I got a nephew who's in a black kid in a rock band. Oh, it's great. I look at him and go, okay, here we go. He's singing. So I'm excited about that. But my dad's family, they never did anything either, but they're really good. I mean, it's like they open their mouth up and it's like, wow. Literally. I mean, if you think I got talent, all my dad's family are exactly like me.
Oh, wow.
Except there's no drive. Yeah. No drive to go do something with it.
Yeah.
And some of them, I have my one sister's wanted to sing and I tried to help her out, but she's just like, you know, it's like they want, people sometimes want you to do it for them. They're not ready to get in the trenches and get rejected and open, go through that door and give up everything and go do something, leave their job and everything, you know, and follow their dreams. None of them would do it. Or even if they gave, tried, they'd always go home. And for me, it was like, there's no turning back. You're going to do this till you die. Whether you know, there's no, you've already made it because you're playing bass. So let's go see what you can do with this.
So did you go to a teacher to learn bass or you just taught yourself?
No, I taught myself. I knew how to play bass before I could make my fingers do what they're supposed to play. So I knew what to do. I learned great in grade school. My teachers knew I was musical. And so I sang a lot in grade school in the choir as a little kid. And the teachers would take me aside and show me chord changes and parts. And I had a one teacher for a while who would make me sit in each section every time we had a choir rehearsal, because I was the only one who could really sing in pitch.
Okay.
And so I would sit in the tenor section, and then she'd say, Doug, sit in it and help them. And I'd go sit in it. And I literally would sit in each section and sing their parts with them, and they would listen, because most of them were telling. It was just a small school, you know, about 30 kids in the choir. There was, you know, everybody wants to be in the choir back in the 50s, because there's nothing else to do, basketball and choir. And maybe sewing and cooking. That was about it. And shop. Shop. You learn how to make chairs. That's what school was like when I went to school.
So would you say you're pretty much more of a singer and then started the bass second?
Yeah, I've been singing all my life. It's just second nature. Like, I mean, I worked really hard at it, but it wasn't that I couldn't. It was just I was so obsessed with singers that I wanted to really, really understand the nuances and what they did. So I listened real close. But I always could sing in pitch, and I knew, you know, but you have to learn. You have to learn your style and listen to other people and let them guide you. You know, soul singers pretty much were my guide, and my school teachers in college and high school who you know, show tunes and, you know, straight up, you know, not rock music period, you know. And I learned that kind of stuff, and, you know, chord changes, cluster chords and classical kind of stuff. But you know, rock is what I loved and I always gravitated to.
So with the bass, did you ever struggle to sing and play at the start?
Only one song. That was One Thing Leads to Another by The Fix. When we used to do cover tunes, I just could not make those two things work. I sat there for hours, and I couldn't let go. You know, it was just and I make up some pretty crazy bass parts and sing over, and I take pride in it, you know. But that was one that whipped me.
Yeah, you see a lot of, I mean, guitar, I find it's a little bit easier. So I played bass in some bands.
And you know, people say it's easier. I don't know. I mean, think about Soundgarden. Chris Cornell played, his riffs were bass riffs. I mean, he wasn't playing much chords, and he was singing straight along with it, you know, and no one said, wow, you know, look what he's doing. I think that, you know, bass and guitar are pretty close to the same things in rock music anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like in jazz or in other things, maybe a different story. Playing all these jazz chords and singing might be easier than playing a jazz bass line and singing.
Right.
But in rock music, it's like we're just playing what the guitar player plays, you know, most of the time.
Yeah.
But I remember, yes. The biggest thing about Yes was how intricate their harmonies and vocals were over top of these crazy bass lines. And Chris Squire was my favorite bass player, one of them, at the time. And I was just so amazed in the middle of Roundabout where they do the three-part harmony with the riff underneath it, and it ain't got nothing to do with the vocals. And that was a big deal for me to learn it. And to love it so much that that's part of King's X.
Yep.
You know, that's a part of what we do is try to do that thing.
Yeah.
Not to make it complicated, but I like the combination of the two.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Because I remember I saw you guys back in 1994. My brother and I were in LA just for a holiday. And I can't remember the club, but we saw you somewhere in LA. And it just blew me away. Like the sound you guys got coming out with the three-part harmonies and just the three-piece bands. Amazing.
Well, we don't hear it, but we're glad you guys do. Sound Man makes that happen.
Yeah.
We're singing a bit off pitch and sloppy, but when he puts the delay and the echo on our voices and stuff, sounds like a choir.
Yeah. Good sound, guys, like from the three of you. It's excellent.
Thanks.
Yeah. There was a back, back. So back to the bass. Did cover bands, did you, at the start?
We did cover music for 8 years.
Okay. And you sang and played bass always?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't wait till you read the book. We're doing a King's X book.
Oh, really?
And it's just finished, and I'm proofreading. We're all proofreading it now. I started yesterday.
Oh.
And every question you're asking me is at the beginning of the book.
Oh, sorry. I won't give it away then.
That's okay. These are questions that people ask all the time. And
yeah, yeah.
It's pretty, if you're asking, you know, if people are listening, they have already heard it. But it's good to have it in the book, you know.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So when do you think that will be ready?
Don't know.
But okay.
Yeah, we just got it. I mean, literally a couple of days ago, I got my download, and I'm on like the second chapter. So
okay.
I hate to read.
Okay. Well, let me know once
it's kind of fun here because the book is basically the guy that wrote it just did interviews with us and everybody that's worked with us, friends, relatives, and other musicians. Really love King's X. We got from Andy Summers to Jeepers. We got a lot of famous people talking about what happened when they first heard King's X. Great stories.
Yeah.
George Lynch and his buddy going out into the desert doing acid, listening to Gretchen all night. You know, I mean, there's some great stories about it. It's like, oh my God, they do things that we did when we put our record on and it blew our mind, you know? And it's like, it's really cool hearing their stories, especially just from people I've been hanging out with and didn't know, you know? We got Jerry Cantrell and Jeff Ament and Kim Thayil from Soundgarden. And we got a whole bunch of people in there just talking. Billy Corgan really said some cool stuff. And Rex from Pantera and just on and on. It was some great, great, great kudos.
Well, I'm sure you guys inspired a lot of bands, especially with the harmonies. And like I said, it's after seeing you guys.
Yeah, people have been telling us, even some of the guys in jant music, Animals as Leaders and Periphery were telling me how I was saying, I went to see them a couple of days ago, and they were telling me, I says, man, you guys just place the groove in this music. And they looked at me and said, well, you're responsible for it. And I'm going, they said it twice to me, and I'm going, okay, thanks. Should get them in the book. But it's staggering, the great comments that I get. And what balances it all out is King's X never sold any records. We're not rich and famous, and I can walk down the street and nobody knows who I am. So it's sort of like, being everybody's favorite band, but nobody knows.
Yeah.
So it keeps me in a place where I'm going, okay, well, I wake up every morning, brush my teeth, and say, here we go. Pay the bills.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's probably a good place to be sometimes rather than...
I wouldn't trade it for the world now. I'm 67 years old. It's like I finally got through all that crap, you know, and I'm pretty content, you know, with my life, best I can be. And it's not a bad life at all.
Yeah.
And I'm really nothing to complain about. I mean, literally nothing to complain about. You know, we all can, and we have our demons and our issues, but you know, I can't write real depressing songs anymore. I'm doing pretty good.
That's good.
Give me a dollar or give me 50 cents. Let me take it back if that ain't what I meant. Give me a coat or give me a bite. Give me a light bulb and make sure it's bright.
I had a guy on my podcast last week, Leon Todd, his name is, from a band
called
Ragdoll. Yeah. And he praised you guys. You know, he said,
He calls me Uncle Doug.
Yeah.
The old band does. He texts me, okay, Uncle Doug.
Yeah. No, he's a great guy.
He was on Facebook or something. I ran across him. I think he was talking to me on Facebook, and he lived in Australia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And anybody that lives in remote places where I don't know anybody, I always buddy with them. And I'm going, dude, you know, and we kept texting each other, you know, and talking to each other all the time. And then he came to the U.S. with his bass player, I think, into L.A., and so we hung out.
Oh, cool.
And I said, just call me Uncle Doug, and that's what he's been doing ever since. He's cool. I love
him. Yeah, he's on the other side of Australia. I'm on the other side.
You're in Australia?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I knew you had an accent, but I didn't realize it was Australian. I thought you were English.
No, I'm in Melbourne, Australia.
Okay, you don't have the real, you know, the one that we say the Barbie and all that.
That's true,
He doesn't even have a word called Barbie.
a lot of people say that. It's like, you don't sound Australian.
Cool.
Yeah. Have you guys been to Australia? King's X?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
We can't get nobody to pay us to go down there because it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And we ain't cheap. We ain't going down there for free.
Yeah.
And if we're gonna get paid for it, we gotta, you know, I mean, I'm not saying we're ridiculously expensive,
but the
promoters just don't believe that they'll win. Mm. They just don't think that anybody will come see us. If we could convince promoters that we could pack a place out, and I think we could. I mean, gosh, there's enough people down there to pack a little club out that have been listening to King's X for the last 30 years, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I think that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Fishbone.
Fishbone played down there. How was the crowd?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it wasn't a huge club. It was a small club, but they did really well.
That's what I'm saying, because, I mean, we draw a little bit more than they do, basically.
That's what I thought,
So that's probably what we would get then.
Yeah. Oh, I'll make it happen.
Okay. Hey, I'm serious.
Yeah. I'll tee it up with Leon. We'll do a double show.
Yeah, we'll come open for him.
Yeah, that's it. Now, so back to King's X days.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, 15 albums now? Is that right?
Something like that.
Love counts.
Literally, something like that. We don't, you know, what's official album and what's a live album? And, you know, it just gets to the point where we just didn't know. So we were arguing over it when we were making the record. And we just said, let's just call it 15.
Yeah.
And we just, okay, we don't know if it's official or not. Yeah. That's what we call the record.
Yeah, that's good. And then you've got...
We love to do crazy stuff like that. We don't care.
Yeah. And you've got 4 solo albums as well?
I think so. Yeah. 2 Pound Down, 2 Doug Owen. Oh, 3 actually, because then there's Naked.
Yep.
There's Naked. That's that was just kind of thrown out there and nobody knew about it much.
All right.
Then I got the 2KXM and 2 Grinded Blues and Super Shine. I got a Hendrix tribute record. Just finished. We're working on the release date now.
Cool.
And KXM's making a new record in January.
Wow. So you got records everywhere.
Yeah, it's crazy. And Bruce from Supershine got a hold of me, and he's got like 5 or 6 new songs, and he wants to work on a new Supershine record. So I'm going to be working my ass off. I ain't complaining not one bit.
That sounds like it. Wow, very busy.
It's good to be busy. I'm running out of words, though, because I got to make lyrics up for everything. I'm running out.
Now, I also want to ask you about, I think it was August 2006, you filled in for Living Colour. Now, did you just sing or sing and play bass?
Just sing.
How did that feel?
Awkward.
Yeah.
He sings higher than my comfort range all the time.
Yep.
So it was a struggle. I never could take a break. My voice didn't rest. I was always hoarse. I was always yelling. I have a live show of it. We played in Slovenia for 40,000 people, and you know, they have those big side screens.
Yep.
So somebody gave me a feed of it.
Okay.
And they told me I could put it out, but it's horrible.
Really?
Just horrible. I'm singing terrible. It's just not cool. And I never did. It's just only a couple people have ever seen it.
Yeah.
Very embarrassing.
Yeah.
Have somebody put it out when I die so they can make some money.
Yeah.
And when you die, all that crap comes out, you know, the bad stuff.
Yeah, that's right. But as far as just singing and not having the bass with you, was that really awkward as well?
That time it was fun.
Yeah.
Because the music was fun, and it reminded me of when I was just a singer before I started playing bass in bands.
Okay.
I've been singing in bands since I was 18, but I didn't start playing bass in a band until I was 24.
Ah, right.
So I was always a front man, but I never knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was just running around dancing, enjoying the music, and then when it came time for me to sing, I just sang.
Yeah.
Then danced some more. You know, I was dumb and young. I didn't know anything. I didn't talk to the crowd. I didn't work anybody. I was just immersed in music, and I just, like a little kid in a, you know, looking for butterflies. That's who I was back then.
Yeah.
So being with Living Colour reminded me of those days. And it taught me another thing, though. It taught me how disconnected singers are to the band. Because when I'm singing and playing, when I'm not singing in King's X, I'm still connected. We're still playing. We're still controlled. There's a thing happening. But when I just sing, it's like they're not listening to me, they're not paying attention to me. It's like they're all doing their own thing, and I'm not locked into them, and I don't know, you know what I'm saying? It's weird. I've been a lead singer in a couple bands in the past 15 years, just side projects, and without playing bass, and it was like that. I just felt like, oh, this is just, you just sing and you go sit out. You watch everybody tear their equipment down and blow them up, and you just kind of, it's a weird way to live, you know. You just kind of have nothing to do. You walk up there. I mean, sound checks, you don't have to fight your sound, your tone, and nothing. It's like, just grab the mic, and if you can't sing it, you'll walk closer to the PA, you know? But I think I might be better. No, I don't know, because even working a crowd, it's easier for me to work a crowd with a bass in my hand, you know, for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, though. I've never really thought about it like that. Yeah, you know, he's saying that. The disconnection between not playing bass and just singing and the band not really connecting. So, yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I've always just played guitar and more of the band.
Well, see, like in soul music and gospel music, the singer leads the band. Wherever they go, everybody follows them.
Yeah.
In rock music, nobody follows the singer.
Yeah.
They're playing the song. The singer just has to find his spot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been with people that will start a song out and they'll start the riff. Well, you can play the riff 8 times or 4 times, right? Well, sometimes, I'm waiting for from the all to fall into the groove, so I'll let the riff go around a couple times and just stand there, just work the crowd. And when I start singing, I'll start singing, and at that point, they're supposed to start counting 4 measures. And then at the third measure, they go to the chorus, and I look around and go, what the f-? It's like, don't you know how to make music and move? And it's like, if the crowd's not happening, you kind of work it. You drive things harder, you work together. And I play with so many musicians who just like, they're just playing their instruments and looking at it, not paying attention. And it's like, I ain't got no time for that.
No, that's right. Yeah, interesting. That's good. So with KXM, are you touring with that as well?
No, I wish.
Really? Just recording.
Ray is with Korn, and if y'all ever get away from Korn and then have a vacation with his family, then maybe we'll do some shows. But we're gonna have to rehearse for at least 3 weeks because we've never played any of this stuff live, or I've never sung and played any of these songs together ever.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we go in the studio, work the songs out, and go home and put the record out. So we got work. We've got some mad offers. People really want to pay us some good money, and I can't wait because I could use that good money. But at this point, Ray is recording, so.
But hopefully more King's X coming up in the future.
Yeah, we're working on, well, I wrote a bunch of songs, and Ty, I think, and Jerry are working on some new music. We finally committed after 12 years to do a new record.
Oh, good.
And we still haven't nailed time, date, where, when, how, or what, but we're a little bit closer. At least we got a list of possibilities and offers. And so that's the next step. And with King's X, it's always, it takes us forever to make a decision. We just like that. We really are. It's crazy.
I mean, because Ty has his solo albums as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's just done too. Joe just from Rat Pack just sent me some info on it, so it'll be coming out soon.
Oh, okay.
And I think Jerry's has been out. But Joe wants to put Rat Pack, King's X out on Rat Pack, but we haven't decided yet.
As far as bass, so anyone listening, my bass player listeners, do you have any tips for them?
For me, bass playing, it's like you have to see somebody play and then you can give them a tip. That's the hardest thing. It's like for me, it's hard to say. I mean, the biggest tip a bass player ever gave me was use my pinky. And did you see he saw me play with 3 fingers, even though Chris Squire played with 3 and not 4. So I start trying, and it's just I always tell bass players that they control the band. They are the foundation. The drummer keeps the time. They are the foundation, and everybody dances up on top of them. And you have to make your bass lines up where they can dance on top of them, and you have to understand space. Not always follow the guitar. Soul music, the bass was the driving thing. Everybody knows when you heard a soul song in the 60s, it was a bass line, always, and then the guitar just came in with the strumming. And nowadays it's turned around, and all of a sudden the guitars are the dominant thing, and they're the loudest in the mix. And I mean, literally just the loudest, and they turn the bass down. And I know we were doing a KXM record, and the bass wasn't loud enough, and I was telling the engineer that was Chris that was mixing it, I says, dude, the bass lines, it's like a piano. It's like the bass lines are a part of the chord. I'm doing things to make that chord happen. If you don't bring my bass up, it ain't happening. you know, and that's the biggest thing. And I guess I would say for up and coming bass players, number one, don't turn down. I was loud and our sound man said, "Doug, you're too loud." I said, "Turn the PA up above me." That's what we did.
Yeah.
And we did it for years. I mean, I had 3,000 watts in 6 SVT cabinets and they were all on. And they were all on. The walls shook with just my rig.
Wow.
And he had to get the drums and guitar and the kick drum and vocals over top of all that. And that was when you saw us.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I was going to say that.
And, you know, and I mean, I there's hardly any bands I go see nowadays you can hear the bass.
Mm.
Back in the 60s, go see Grand Funk. All you heard was bass. You know, I mean, it was like, it was the thing. And it's changed now. So, you know, I don't have a lot of things to say to bass players other than be loud and proud, be your own people, take it back. Because we've been, dude, think about that. In the 80s, you go to the 80s bands, the hair metal bands, you go see them play, and there would be 5 stacks of Marshalls on each side with 2 guitar players and 1 little SVT next to the drum riser. And I would go up to bass. I mean, I went up to Frankie from Anthrax and go, "Why you only have 1 SVT up there when both you guys got a wall of money?" "Well, that's, you know, that's how it is, you know." Mm. And they all would just say, "Well, that's how it is."
Yeah.
And no way. And we toured with all those bands. We'd walk on stage, they have my wall of bass amps cranking, you know, and they'd all go, and I'd go do it. And they go, "No, they won't let us." It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, at least you got the right way anyway.
Well, I'm just loud and proud.
Yeah.
And I got the right band too, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because they put up with it. Jerry doesn't put me in monitors or in anything.
Not really.
Nothing. Yeah. Never. Okay. And Ty doesn't put me in any monitor on his side either. And he always says I'm louder than he is on that side. On his side, the low end is twice as loud when on my side because I'm right there before it develops. So I hear it. But when you get over on his side, it's just a wall of, and he's got to get through that. So they're all used to me.
Oh, wow. That's excellent. That's good. I mean, it's good little tips for people listening anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Doug. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bob.
All right. I'll talk to you again, hopefully soon.
Peace.
Okay, bye-bye. So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Doug. That was great. We had a really good laugh. So it was a good, fun little interview. And also, don't forget to check out my website, Become a Guitarist Today, where you can check out all my previous podcasts and also get to see some of the videos from the people who have been on the podcast. And also, if you want to join up and become a member, you can do so. So check out the shop page. It's got all the different membership prices, which start from $2.50 until $20. So I hope you can join me next week where I'm doing a double podcast again. I've got Sunday with Matt Deacon from New Zealand. He's in a band called The Bob Lazar Story. And then next Wednesday, I'm interviewing Tim Harding from High Five. So until next week, keep jamming.